And good afternoon and welcome to the June 27th edition of Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm in the studio with LaRon Landis and Alex the intern. Patty is at her high school reunion in Switzerland. And I'm not kidding on that one.
No, he's not.
No, that's where she went to school, so she had to go to her high school reunion in Switzerland. She sent a note. It was like 68 degrees where she was.
Must be nice.
Yeah, very nice. She'll be there for 3 weeks. What high school reunion takes 3 weeks?
They really love their high school.
I guess so. You can friend us on Facebook and download podcasts of the show when Alex the intern's here and he makes it work. At lambdaweekly.com. And today we have as our special guest Dave Guy Gaynor. He is a board member of the Service Members Legal Defense Network. Welcome, Dave.
Hi. Thank you. I miss Patty already. She defends me when I'm here.
She does. No, that's on LaRon, and it's all the way up, and you're not hearing it? Turn the mic right at you. Yeah, that should work
better.
Yeah, that is a little bit better. Good. Okay. We're going to talk a little bit about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. One thing that we'll talk about a little bit later is DART's decision to add non-discrimination for everybody and not take it away from some people who already had it. But, Dave, your specialty is Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Just give us a little bit of your background. You have served in the military.
Retired United States Air Force Chief Master Sergeant, 23 years, 3 months and 2 days, but I didn't keep track.
3 months, 3 days. He didn't keep track. Yeah, I think it was 9 o'clock that I signed up, and I didn't get out until 11 in the morning. But
the bus number to Lackland was 27.
Yeah. And you left in what year?
1990.
Which is before Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Correct.
So what do you care about Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
I care a lot about it. It hurts our folks.
It does hurt. Why does it hurt?
Well, imagine getting up one day and coming to your wonderful job at the radio station, for which you get highly paid, and you're well-trained.
We do.
And then all of a sudden...
Especially Alex.
After being a wonderful radio talk show host for several years and being awarded and commended for it, they say, we don't like you here anymore. You can't be part of us. We love you, but goodbye.
Because you're gay.
Because you're gay.
So we'll hire some straight people to do the gay show.
And in addition to that, you're going to ruin the unit cohesion of the rest of the radio station.
And, you know, of course, I'm being facetious about the whole thing. Obviously, it's nothing but blatant discrimination, always has been. When you were in the military, though, you left because of discrimination against gays and lesbians.
Well, when I was still on active duty and before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we didn't have the occasion of leaving with less than honorable discharge. Ours were dishonorable discharges, which meant loss of all pay and benefits, in addition to loss of ego and loss of your career and loss of your job. We were silent for another reason, I suppose, at that time. Not that there's any difference between being discharged dishonorably and today, because today's folks are discharged with a little footnote on their DD-214 that says reason for discharge, homosexual. So you're still flagged. It's just, in most cases, an honorable or administrative discharge.
And for people who really don't know, what is the difference? I mean, if you're out, you're out, but there is a difference, isn't there?
Let's see, one of my jobs after I retired from the Air Force was as an Army DOD civilian. Mm-hmm. And they certainly wanted to know what I did in the military, and DD-214 is what you produce along with your resume to show what you did, what training courses you had, and the fact that you served honorably. Many civilian employers ask for the same thing. AT&T did when I worked for them. So today's service member that's discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell carries them with them a document that says right up front to my prospective employer, I'm gay.
Mm-hmm. In the last time you were here, you told me that, and I was just kind of blown away, because I think for most people, you think, regardless of how you leave the military, honorably or dishonorably, once you're out, you can go on about your regular civilian life. You didn't realize that this could really follow you for the rest of your life.
And it does.
And it does. So. That's just really interesting.
As part of the repeal, and we'll talk about the repeal in a minute, but as part of the repeal, will that change any of the discharges from years ago?
I suppose the Pentagon Working Group is addressing that now, as to whether or not they will bridge service. Certainly, those who are discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, if they were fit for duty for all the other reasons, could re-enter the military.
Mm-hmm. But that would be more recent people.
Correct.
I'm talking about people who were discharged years ago, before Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Well, we're addressing the law that we call Don't Ask, Don't Tell, not the UCMJ that existed prior to. So
okay.
I doubt that it would, but that's an interesting question.
Universal Code of Military Justice.
Yes.
And I knew that. And Laurent is looking
wow.
at me with wide eyes like, wow, he knew that. When you first went into the military, you went in during Vietnam era, or was it at the end of Vietnam?
No, it was during. It was during.
It was during. Okay. I was in college at the time. I had to apply for my draft card. One of the things that I tried to get was exemption because I'm gay. They wouldn't accept it. So did you hear anything about that at the time? They wouldn't accept it, and yet had I gone in and been gay, I would have been dishonorably discharged for it at the time.
That's strange, because prior to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there was actually a question on the recruiting form that you filled out.
Well, my year was, it was during Vietnam also, and they wanted everybody at the time. I mean, during wars, there's a history of the military wanting gay people, and you get rid of them after the war, after we don't really need you. You don't know other examples of that, though, particularly?
No, I don't.
No, okay. Because we were told at the time where we filled that out, nope, you can't do that. That's not the way to get out.
Well, let's shoot ahead up to current, today. What do you think of the way the process is going to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell? You know, we had a historic vote, 2-3 weeks ago? The House did pass to end the ban. We talked a little bit before the show. Who knows when the Senate's going to take it up? But what do you think about the progression of it? Is it moving quick enough for you? I know some people think it's not.
Well, I guess in my heart I would say it's not moving quick enough. It should have moved quick enough in 1994.
Yeah, isn't that interesting how fast they were able to pass it?
It was a fun week, and the vote was 234 to 194. And if you recall, when I was on the show, we were at 187 for co-sponsors, and I was praying that we could get enough vote at 218. So the week of the House vote was a tremendously powerful week, and from my perspective, with folks around the country communicating directly by way of texting to people working in the offices of Congress and making phone calls and sending emails to our contacts. One that hit home very closely to me was, for years I worked with Charlie Gonzalez, Representative Gonzalez of San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
I got a text at home that said, we've got 4 representatives that are leaning toward no in South Texas. Help us out. So I called Representative Gonzalez's office, and within 30 minutes, I get a copy of the email that he sent to us for, encouraging them to vote yes. 3 out of 4 voted yes.
Hmm.
So that's the kind of activity we had. So that was fast paced.
Isn't that interesting? Because when Don't Ask, Don't Tell passed, there was an internet, there was email, but lots of people didn't have computers yet.
Right.
So there wasn't this kind of activity.
I felt like I was part of a geographically dispersed command post that week. That was very fast-paced, but is the repeal coming fast enough for Dave Gaynor? No. Because every day we're still discharging someone. We're still crushing some soul. We're still throwing out good people. And we're still labeling people as homosexuals and incompatible with military service. That continues. Repeal can't come fast enough.
Okay, now, and you gave me an answer again before the show. We were sitting talking a little bit, and you gave me the answer to this. My opinion of this military working committee was that they're talking about things that are just ridiculous, that what they're really looking for is a way to keep discriminating. And you said, well, that was your opinion kind of going into this, but as you've been following it, and you do know people who've been involved in in the process who've gone and talked to the committee, people who are working with the committee. You said that's really not what's going on. So tell us a little bit about this committee. Why was it created? Was it created just as a stall tactic? Because I think, Laurent, that gets to what you were saying.
That's what I thought initially.
That's what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
And is it being reported on? Because what we're hearing, you know, you said initially that's what you thought too, Dave. And I think you and I are reading the same mainstream reports that are being written by military reporters, not by not by people who are involved in things like gay rights and Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal and things like that. Being written by military reporters who aren't used to dealing with the gay issue. So tell us what this committee is, what they're doing, what they can accomplish.
If you go back to Secretary Gates' testimony, initial testimony, when he proposed the working group and established the working group, he was very clear in there that he was going to study implementation and not whether or not repeal should happen. And he based that upon the fact that he can't author repeal himself. Congress has to do that. So he had asked for time until December of this year to study all the implementation issues that would come along with repeal.
And I guess what we're thinking initially is implementation means letting gays serve,
right.
End of story. But that's really not the end of the story. There really are some issues that we hadn't thought of.
That's true. And when you think of a large corporate structure like DOD, there are a lot of personnel issues to study. Of course, the first one that comes to mind is, you know, how do we arrange the barracks? So far, their answer has been the gays and lesbians are serving. They're serving in the barracks. They live in the barracks today, so that's not an issue. But the issues get more complex the deeper you go into implementation. For example, I can be a legally married gay chief from Massachusetts, married to my husband, David, and we could have adopted children in Massachusetts, and I could be part of the Air National Guard of Massachusetts, sworn to defect to protect Massachusetts.
And in Massachusetts, you can do that openly now.
Right.
Totally
legal.
Yeah.
Then my unit is activated into federal service, and now the military has to deal with me. I can be gay at home, mm-hmm. but how do they deal with me? Do they recognize my spouse? How do they deal with my children?
Can they even discharge? You know, right now, if you're in the Massachusetts National Guard, you're working for the Massachusetts National Guard, your unit is called up, you're sent to Iraq, but you're gay, can they throw you out?
Yes. Because Don't Ask, Don't Tell says that I'm incompatible.
So doesn't that person have a really good lawsuit since they were hired for the Massachusetts National Guard legally?
I would think so, and so would Iowa, folks from Iowa.
Hasn't anybody from Iowa or Massachusetts filed a lawsuit on that one?
I thought that Massachusetts did already. Could be wrong.
I don't know.
Okay.
That's an aside to all this.
And kind of an interesting political one.
I think perhaps the dependent would have a better, credible lawsuit than the military member.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the issue. The issue is let's get rid of this whole silly, bigoted law.
Right. And really what I guess they're studying when you say implementation, first of all, the approach is, I guess, by the military, we don't make the laws. We're told what to do. We were told to implement Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now, if we're being told not to implement it anymore, to repeal it, it's how do we implement the repeal? And people who are going to them saying, well, what if we don't want to serve with gays and lesbians? The answer to them is, that's not the question. We don't decide who serves. We didn't decide when to integrate the troops. We didn't decide when women would serve in the military. That's something that Congress tells us, that the civilian leadership tells us. We're here to study, if this passes, how do we do it?
Correct.
That's an interesting approach. I haven't heard it in mainstream media addressed just that way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, couldn't the military just say, okay, fine, once Don't Ask, Don't Tell, once the ban is official, just say, let them in without this committee. They can serve. Are they, I guess, being proactive and trying to avoid possible lawsuits from certain gay and lesbian military members who will then say, well, okay, you're letting me in now, so now why don't you recognize recognizing my marriage, and a lot of this surrounds marriage and adoption rights and so forth, and we'll want to force the military to recognize those. Do you think they're just being proactive and trying to stab off some of that?
In our society, I do. You know, a lot of times I'll use the example of Great Britain, of England, and their military forces, but we have to remember that the European court system is what overcame their don't ask, don't tell, and allowed for inclusion. And that order happened overnight, and the forces of Great Britain adapted to it, and some of the friends that I have that are members there said it was like, I woke up and I was okay. Mm-hmm. I went to bed, I was bad, I woke up, I was okay, and they progressed. Our military perhaps is a little more bigoted than those services that we would like to be like. To answer your question, when we talk about Truman integrated the military, Truman didn't integrate the military. We finally integrated the military to a great extent in the 1970s and 1980s. And we talked about this, I think, last show. We mm-hmm. had race riots on our bases in the mid-70s. So I think this approach perhaps will offset some of the lethargy that the military had in integration of gays and lesbians in the service, that it will address the socialization issues up front. And as people that, if I'm a bigoted person from Podunk and I don't want to serve with gays, then I can exit as this repeal process is coming about.
Now, isn't that interesting? Because, you know, first of all, you're saying Truman didn't really integrate. What is it that Truman actually did?
Well, he brought, in specific, blacks and women into the military, but they, at the same time, they compartmentalized them. If you look at history, blacks were transportation people for a number of years.
So specific jobs.
Yeah. Women were in administrative functions. Filipinos were ship stewards, so we integrated, but we at the same time we compartmentalized and discriminated against them once they got there.
They weren't free to move around and
have
every opportunity that a white service member would.
Okay. You had white dorms, black dorms, female dorms. You had.
Is that why Colin Powell is so unique, because he rose above that, or did he begin rising in the 70s when the real integration actually started?
Well, both. But you have to remember that I served for about 3 years uh-huh. under a wonderful four-star Air Force general by the name of Daniel Chappie James, Jr., who was the first black four-star in the Air Force. When asked during this time of race relations, human relations, and building bridges, when asked about integration in the Air Force, Chappie James' quote was, "My Air Force is not black and white. My Air Force is Technicolor." So leaders, he was one of the Tuskegee Airmen and attained the rank of four stars long before the current four stars got theirs. I think today Chappie would say, "My Air Force is not black and white. It's rainbow."
An interesting way to put it. Why don't we take our break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guest today is Dave Guy Gaynor. He is a board member of the Service Members Legal Defense Network. We'll be talking more about gays in the military right after this.
Selling that old car truck, or just don't want the bother of selling it, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can help. Just call 817-KNON-AUTO. Or donate online at knon.org. It's so easy when the tow truck comes to your home and picks up the vehicle. They give you the paperwork that you'll need and relieve the stress of what to do with the old car that won't sell. The number to call is 817-KNON-AUTO. Or donate online at knon.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and Alex, the intern. Patty is off in Europe right now. It's tough. It's real tough.
Poor thing.
Yeah, we're talking to Dave Guy Gaynor. Dave, you recently ran for city council of Forest Hill, which is a small city in southeast Tarrant County. You would have become the second openly gay elected official in Tarrant County, lost by just a few votes. What happened?
I needed more campaign contributions.
Okay, well, and we couldn't have you on before then because we just... We're that kind of station.
I ran against a six-term city councilman, born and raised and lived in Forest Hill all of his life. I'm a new guy, and I think we made a great showing.
Yeah, in the end, you lost by, when I say just a few votes,
it was
55. I knew it was fewer than 100 votes that separated you.
So I should have taken about, never mind.
Hey, but that's pretty impressive for your first time.
Yeah, it is. First time you ran for office?
Yes.
Thinking of doing it again?
I had a temporary lapse of sanity, but I would probably do it again.
You would do it again. Good.
I definitely will.
Well, Dave, you're on the board of the Service Members Legal Defense Network, which is an organization that was created to defend gays and lesbians who are dismissed from the military against the government for their dismissal. Defend them, advise them, do whatever you can. I've had a question for a long time about don't ask, don't tell. The policy is don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue was the original name for it. The don't pursue part sure got dropped from that name originally. We sure go after the ones who tell. Have they ever gone after anybody who asked?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Shouldn't they?
Yes.
It's part of the law.
Yes.
So if Laurent is your commanding officer and he's going around and ferreting out information about you, and you're not telling, which is what the law tells you to do, he should be thrown out of the military for asking, shouldn't he?
I would say yes.
Okay. I just wanted to know if I was the only one who actually thought that.
Yeah, I've never thought of that, David. Good point.
It was don't ask, don't tell. They're two parts of the same thing. If you're asking, that's against the law. If you're telling, that's against the law. I'm not making a judgment call on any of it. I'm just saying that's what the law is. Two sides. Mm-hmm. We're throwing out one side. We're not going after the other side. This week, they're going to start Senate confirmation hearings for Elena Kagan. One of the most controversial things that she's done, it isn't really all that controversial, but one of the things that she's done that is sure to come up in the hearings is when she was the dean of Harvard Law School, she briefly prevented prevented the military from recruiting on campus because anybody who comes on the Harvard Law School campus to recruit needs to sign a pledge that says you will not discriminate based on a whole list of requirements, age, sex, race, sexual orientation. You just have to. Basically, it's if they're one of our students, you can't say, well, I'll interview you and you, but I'm not going to interview you and you.
And I'm glad you pointed it out. It's a whole list.
It's a whole list.
Because the way the media is blowing it up is like, oh, Elena Kagan just threw the military off base because they discriminated against gays. It's like, well, you have to sign a pledge that applies to all of these.
Now, in response to that, and my school up in New York did the same thing, wasn't going to do it. They passed an amendment called the Solomon Amendment. The Solomon Amendment says that any school that accepts any federal money has to accept military recruiters on campus. So my school gave in. Harvard Law School gave in. That law was actually found unconstitutional by this conservative Supreme Court in 2005. Now, hearings. What do you think they're going to do to her? Just do you think that a few senators are just going to grandstand on this issue? Do you think it really has anything to do with where she stands on the issue? I mean, and Laurent also.
I think
I'll back you up. Laurent.
Personally, she probably does agree with that, but at the same time, she's following the school policy. I mean, I think anybody in her position would have done the same thing. And she quickly retracted.
And when
she had to. I mean, I think it really puts colleges in a really weird situation or a bad situation. What do you want? The funds? which I assume is a lot of money that comes from the government. You want the funds, or do you want, you want the funds? Because either you accept the military and get the money, or you don't get the money.
It's the gold standard.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my school had the perfect resolution for it. Whenever the military came on campus to recruit during this time, they gave them a table, but they gave the Gay and Lesbian Alliance a table right next to them. So just to remind people that...
I would excuse me, forecast some grandstanding. But, mm-hmm. If that is the only issue that they can come up with, I don't see any problem with...
Her getting confirmed.
Here's what I think about it, and the right person will twist it just this way. Republicans are always looking for strict constructionists. She was strictly constructing. What she was doing was saying, here's the rule, here's what we have to follow. If you can't follow the rule on our campus, then you can't come on our campus to recruit. That's our rule. I'm a strict constructionist. And if the military's policy is to discriminate, that's your rule, and it is your rule by law. As a Supreme Court justice, it's up to me to rule on whether a law that Congress passes is constitutional, and, you know, I'm waiting to hear those arguments. I was being a strict constructionist based on Harvard's rules. That's how I think she's going to spin it.
Do you think that, I don't know, I don't have a long habit of watching confirmation hearings, but do you think they'll bring up at all about her sexual orientation?
I think
it would be really inappropriate, but
of course it's inappropriate.
I don't put anything past certain.
I think in a very backdoor way they're going to.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen the latest, but now some groups are saying that she's an ex-gay. She's a confirmed ex-gay.
Yeah, and Elliot Spitzer, who's former governor of New York, he said he went to law school with her. He said he can guarantee that she's not. I mean, he all but said, look, I slept with her. So
God bless him.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. This should be interesting. The other Don't Ask, Don't Tell news that's coming up this week, there is a trial going before a federal judge on July 13th. Very bizarre circumstances, because log cabin Republicans sued to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Do you know anything about this suit, Dave, particularly?
Just, yes. I'm not in great detail. Yeah, the fact that the original lawsuit was nearly dismissed because of lack of an individual plaintiff. And one of our great allies, Alex Nicholson, stepped forward to be the plaintiff to lead the class action suit. And that goes forward. And the Obama administration's Justice Department is under a significant amount of heat because their job, as you said, as a strict constructionist, were to support Don't Ask, Don't Tell because it is the law,
mm-hmm.
and file briefs that quoted all the badness from 1993. Now Obama is facing supporting the demise of Don't Ask, Don't Tell with the Justice Department says it has to stay.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize that the current administration, whatever that administration is, they're obligated to defend the law, whatever the law is.
And interestingly, in the Proposition 8 case out in California law differs. The state decided not to defend Proposition 8, and so other people came in as the defendants. That's California law. Federally, the Justice Department has to defend the law. So Obama is in the position, his administration's in the position of defending Don't Ask, Don't Tell against log cabin Republicans who are trying to get rid of the law.
While he's also trying to get this through Congress.
Well, he says he's trying to get rid of the law as well.
Whose party supports discrimination in all forms against them.
Right. it's just kind of ironic. Not that I'm saying log cabin Republicans has not always been on the side of all gay people wanting to get rid of it. It's that it's a Republican group going against a Democratic group with the sides switched here, which makes it an interesting case. In this case, actually, what's going on is that the Obama administration now is arguing to delay the case because they're saying it could just be redundant, it'll be expensive, there's no reason to hear it. If you delay the case till after the Senate decides whether or not to include the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the whole case
so it could be moot.
Is moot.
Yeah.
Right. So no point in doing something that's,
right,
you know, just wait a few weeks.
Well, and you still have to consider the case of Witt versus Air Force is still alive on the other coast, on the left coast.
And what is that case?
That case, the federal courts have said that the Air Force must prove that Major Witt disrupted unit cohesion and was a detriment to the Air Force when she was a combat flight nurse performing well. So the Air Force is running around now saying, how do we say that she was the detriment when we awarded her and decorated her and promoted her and she saved lives?
Mm-hmm. Right.
The scales of justice are in play right here between the left and right coast.
Mm-hmm. And isn't that an interesting argument? It's interesting that argument's never really been fought before, that you're discharging me and you're calling me a detriment. Why did you award me this medal? Because a number of the people who've been discharged have been awarded medals. Dan Choi is a good example of one who's multiple discharged. Now, you and I have talked before about this. Dan Choi makes you a little bit uncomfortable. And just because we're all on the same side on things doesn't mean we all have to agree on tactics.
That's absolutely true. Dan is a friend of mine, and we've been on the Hill together. Most poignantly in Senator Webb's office, lobbying him.
And tell first who Dan Choi is, because not everybody listening would know.
Dan Choi is a reservist from New York. He's captain. He's combat trained, combat experienced.
Served in Iraq.
Served in Iraq, Iraq veteran, who is being discharged and is still being discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
What's Dan's, taken so long to get rid of him?
Dan is also a West Point graduate.
Yeah. Who has taught intelligence gathering or at West Point again?
He's bilingual and the son of a Baptist minister, and a translator. A lot, a wealth of skills, and a wonderful person. I'm not taking issue with Dan at all. Everyone has to do what they have to do. I've marched in parades across Texas to include Waco. Others would may say that the chief marching those parades might be the wrong thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right or wrong, Dan chose to commit some civil disobedience in a big way by handcuffing himself to the
White House.
Yeah, to the White House.
White House fence. Yeah, twice.
Twice. But that's what Dan is doing for the cause.
And what bothered you about that?
The only thing that bothered me about it was the fact that he is still a litigant, and he was in uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll see me wearing my uniform in parades and different times, but I think there's a time to leave the uniform off when we get into civil disobedience, because that's not what my uniform is all about.
The parade,
I wear it proudly.
The parade is wearing it proudly to show that, yes, I have served proudly in the military, but the civil disobedience to overturn a law is...
I can do that as Dave Gaynor, but I probably wouldn't do that as Chief Gaynor, because mm-hmm. there's a separation. And that sounds a little, perhaps, bigoted, I guess.
No, it doesn't sound bigoted. I think your point of it is respect for the uniform and respect for the military that goes above the policy that's imposed on the military by Congress.
No, it doesn't sound bigoted.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Y'all wear my...
Stay on the dock!
These friends are... Getting back
and
together.
Remember we used to come here after we got wasted.
Okay. What's wasted?
When you have a hankering for...
Agape Church in Forest Hill, Texas, mm-hmm. to be their guest preacher next week.
Mm-hmm.
4th of July is on Sunday in my uniform. So my sermon is on Are You Ready to Be Independent? And the song I've asked them to sing is This Little Light of Mine. So that should give you an idea of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we go to the entertainment report, and we're going to talk more with Dave Guy Gaynor about Service Member Legal Defense Network, getting rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, what's going on there. But let's start with the entertainment report.
Alrighty, glad that as the Gay, Lesbian, Alliance Against Defamation is upset with The View. There was a recent episode on The View when host Sherry Shepherd and guest host D.L. Hughley caused quite a bit of controversy while making some misinformed comments about HIV and AIDS in the African-American community. They claim that African-American gay and bisexual men who are on the DL, the down low, are pretty much responsible for the high HIV rates for African-American women. That's not true. And even the CDC has confirmed that. That's just that's misinformation.
In their defense.
And a myth that's kind of been going around.
In their defense.
Okay.
I wrote a story about some HIV organizations and what's going on for National HIV Testing Day, which, by the way, is Tuesday.
It is.
I quoted some new statistics that came out from the CDC.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a letter from somebody from the CDC the next day asking me to correct. I wrote five sentences basically on their statistics,
mm-hmm.
asking me to correct my statistics. They were just entirely wrong. If you will look at chart number 20A that shows the such and such of the such and such instead of chart 12B, and if you look and compare those to chart 14C, they were so confusing. And in Texas, even though you said that Texas has the second largest population but is only fourth in number of new cases, the percentage actually is lower if you look at page 37. Unbelievable what the CDC released. It was not readable. And if they misquoted,
well,
the CDC did not write something in English.
And you know what? And I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, Cindy. You're probably correct. I don't think I would give Sherry Shepherd the benefit of the doubt. I don't think they read any CDC reports.
Probably not.
They are just going off of rumor, myth, or whatever.
And believe me, I read it.
And coming to their own assumptions.
My favorite that they told me that I got wrong?
Right.
When I gave the number of cases, I apparently had left out Guam. And my numbers were all wrong. I had 500 and blah, 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 1,000, and it was actually like 2,000 more than that.
Well, GLAAD has asked The View and ABC, which is the network that The View airs on, to retract that information and, you know, offer a correction. And so far, they're refusing to do so. So I find that interesting.
And that's interesting.
Yeah, because ABC, for the most part, is a gay-friendly network. I don't know why they're not making them, because that is putting out misinformation and just perpetuates a bad stereotype.
Right.
So,
right. And they should have, in their defense, they should have somebody from the CDC come on for 5 minutes and give us the correct statistics. Because to interpret what they wrote isn't possible.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't think they even read it. if you haven't seen it already, be sure to catch a repeat of the latest episode of HBO's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, in which he interviews the openly gay Welsh rugby superstar Gareth Thomas. Now, Thomas talks about the lengths he went to appear straight, from hitting on the prettiest girls to starting fights. He even says how excited he was when he got arrested because it made him look tougher. Thomas reiterates his hope that an American athlete will come out while in play. We still have yet that, for a male athlete anyway. All the gay athletes that have come out after they have retired. And last, this week CNN aired the special Gary and Tony Have a Baby as part of this American In America series. You know, they had the Black in America, the mm-hmm. Latino in America. And so I know earlier this year, there was a big move for them to have a gay in America. Well, I guess this is their attempt to do it. Anyway, they followed this couple around from New York from the beginning of them hiring a surrogate all the way to the delivery of the baby. Now this week, they're going to air, I guess, what they're calling a gay Brady Bunch. These two men who have, one had four kids, one had three kids, and they're married. So they have seven kids now. So calling them the gay Brady Bunch. And also they have another one show titled called Gay is All Right If You're White, which takes a look at the challenges of race and ethnicity within the gay community. So they're doing some interesting things. Mm-hmm. I did see the Gary and Tony Have a Baby episode. It was interesting.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. And those people from Circle Surrogacy were just here a month or so ago talking about how you can do surrogacy.
Yes.
So, yeah. And speaking of, how was your Father's Day?
My Father's Day was really good.
Good.
Really good.
Good.
It was really nice to go to a restaurant, not in Oak Lawn, and immediately have the waitress come up and say, Happy Father's Day to both of you.
Ah.
So that was nice.
Well, that is nice.
Very
nice. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be back with more right after this.
Check out got KNON's brand new website at www.knon.org. You can listen to KNON from anywhere in the world with our live internet broadcast stream. See the program schedule and info on all the DJs and formats. Find out about special events, upcoming benefits, and get advance tickets online. Go to KNON.org and support great community radio anytime by making a pledge of support to the voice of the people. The all-new KNON.org.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
It's time for those darn heterosexuals. We know Pat Robertson's predictions of gays causing hurricanes has never worked out quite right, but what about an Iranian Ayatollah? In mid-April, a senior Iranian cleric issued a warning that recent earthquakes in Haiti, Chile, and elsewhere were caused by women's loose sex and immodest dress. Jennifer McWright responded with a Facebook page urging women worldwide to dress provocatively on April 26th to create Boobgate. Boobquake. More than 90,000 signed up, and on April 26th, don't do that. On April 26th, an earthquake measuring 6.5 on a Richter scale hit just south of Taiwan.
Right. And Dave is giving his version of Boobquake. Fortunately, we're not on TV right now.
I wish we were.
We've discussed this one before, but it deserves its place among those darn heterosexuals. A New York Times CBS News poll in February asked self-identified Democrats about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. 79% approve of gays and lesbians serving openly in the military, but only 43% approve of homosexuals serving openly in the military.
And that's an absolutely true fact.
Fernando Gonzalez, age 35, was a high school teacher in Galena Park, Texas. He was sentenced to 7 years in prison in March after he was caught watching child pornography on his classroom computer. But he had a good explanation, court. He said he had no other choice because his wife banned him from watching child porn at home.
And Karen Salmonson is the author of self-help books for women with relationship and career problems. Her books include The Prince Harming Syndrome and How to Make Your Man Behave in 21 Days or Less Using the Secrets of Successful Dog Trainers. She filed a lawsuit in March against Mitchell Leff. She said he strung her along for months with promises of marriage and a baby, but abruptly cut off support when she became pregnant. She said, "I'm a self-help author, not a psychic." And that's this week's
Those Darn Heterosexuals.
We're talking about Don't Ask, Don't Tell with Dave Guy Gaynor from Service Members Legal Defense Network. We were talking a little bit about this this group that's that the military has put together to implement. And the reports seem to be, and this is what you're saying is absolutely not true, the reports seem to be more that people are going into this group trying to figure out, but I don't want to serve with gay people. And what is the group's answer to that seem to be?
The group's answer to that is they're trying to stay on focus, and their focus is on implementation after the repeal and addressing the myriad of issues that come up. And from the feedback that I've received, actually offset those remarks with, mm-hmm. we're not here to talk about whether or not you want to serve. It's how are we going to serve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the problems, you know, the right wing and anybody who's against this, the arguments always come down to, of course, sex. And the answer to that is if you don't want to have gay sex, then you shouldn't be having it. That's what makes sense to me. Just because I'm a gay person or you were a gay person in a barracks and you did not want to have heterosexual sex, nobody was forcing you to do it. Am I right?
That's yeah. Generally true, I suppose. Yeah.
Unless
I were a soccer player.
Unless you were. Now, in your experience in the military, though, one of the things that you've told me before is people don't live in Gomer Pyle type barracks anymore. And that's the old Quonset huts. And Laurent is looking at me, and so is Alex. Like, what is Gomer Pyle?
I know who Gomer Pyle is.
Do you know who Gomer Pyle is, Alex?
I do.
Okay. Well, good. Because
we know.
They're both looking at me like, oh, God, he's doing those 1960s references again. like we know what he's talking about. But what are barracks like, actually, now?
Well, if you look at even in Iraq today, the barracks themselves are typically one or at most two-person rooms, but for the most part, single rooms. Perhaps two adjoining rooms have a common bathroom that you lock when you go in. It's not the open bay, 30, 40 men in bunk beds in a single large room. I know that disappoints Alex.
Oh, well, I guess, you know, I won't join the military now.
But there's a lot of privacy. It's not like the...
It's more like a college dorm than
correct.
And you're saying it's even like that in Iraq. Maybe while they're setting up more traditional modern barracks, there might be Quonset hut type living, or not even
like that for the GI that's out on patrol. But mm-hmm. certainly when they're back in garrison, they're back in a mm-hmm. barracks environment that Halliburton built for them.
Mm-hmm.
And even their. When you talk about gang showers in the field environment, they're partitioned off. And here we go with an old show like MASH.
Mm-hmm.
You remember they used to have conversations on mm-hmm. MASH while they're having a shower, and they're all little boxes in their own private shower. It's not.
I thought they did that for television only because they couldn't show an open shower. But you're saying that's really more realistic.
Correct.
And that's interesting because that's one of the biggest arguments that they have. And probably because there hasn't been a military show since MASH. I mean, Gomer Pyle is more the stereotype they like to use. The other one that they use is, I don't want to have a gay person with me in my foxhole. Now, I know there were foxholes during World War I. Mm-hmm. Have there been foxholes since then?
I would assume that we still entrench ourselves, but not to that extent. Let's go back to the 90s. Senator Barry Goldwater says you don't have to be straight to shoot straight. And that's what concerns the person who's in battle the most. Is my battle buddy going to come through? Is the battle buddy going to watch my back? Is the battle buddy going to be aggressive? Is he going to be the trained killer that he's supposed to be?
I would hope so. That's your main concern.
The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. Last time you were here, we went through some of these idiotic reasons as to why gays should not be in the military. And here's a new one. Well, it was new for me, is that supposedly there are, you mentioned earlier, David, some men don't want to serve with gay people, so it's going to make new recruitments go down. Mm-hmm. Has there been any proof of that, just from polling?
Or is that one of the things even that they're studying?
That could be. It should be. One of the things they're studying, and I'm fairly certain it is. You have to remember, though, that we have numbers that say 45,000 would join tomorrow. New recruits would join tomorrow. And we've got the all of those who have been discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, without a doubt, would go back if they could go back.
And there would be a number who've been discharged who would go back. How many have been discharged since the beginning of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Well, if you look at our numbers, it's right at 14,000 that we know of, but we don't handle all the cases.
So you know of 14,000, and you're assuming, obviously, people go on with their lives.
And it doesn't count those who just quit.
That's right.
You know, I did my 3 years, and I can't lie anymore. I'm going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't reenlist.
Right.
So you're saying there would be a number of reenlistments, there would be a number from this 14,000 who would go back, and who knows the number that have decided not to even try to enlist.
Correct.
Because I'm a gay person, and the thing is, kids come out a lot younger now than they mm-hmm. ever did before. Right. When you joined way back in the 1940s, did you even know you were gay at the time that you first joined?
I had a pretty good idea, but I was also... excuse me, raised as a very fundamentalist Christian, and I couldn't be that way.
Mm-hmm.
I had no future, I had no job, I had no college money.
You joined at the age of 18?
Correct.
When a lot of people have not come out yet. I mean,
A lot of folks are still wrestling with their sexuality. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I was still a virgin, I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. There, I had inclinations of what I might do.
That's one of the things that I've always thought was one of the most unfair things about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because even though lots and lots of kids come out at the age of 13 and 14 now, Youth First Texas is filled with hundreds of kids accessing their services when they're 13, 14, 15 especially, 16 especially, but there are lots of people who are not out at 18.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people could be in your position, not even wrestling with it yet, not thinking about that yet in a very, very serious way. They join the military, and at age 20, they're more ready to deal with whether or not, you know, what their sexuality is, what is their sexual orientation, and then they can be thrown out for it.
Yep.
As opposed to my husband, David, who was picking a husband in first grade.
Anyway.
Well, you know, something else you told me you were here when you were here last time that I hadn't really thought about, and that is, you know, the pursue part, David.
Mm-hmm.
Someone in the military could be suspected of being gay, and in fact, they're not. Is there any way to prove, in fact, that you're not?
And what do you do?
And they could be discharged, and in fact, they really aren't gay.
Well, since we talked about that, the rules have changed a little bit. DOD's changed the rules as far as what is credible evidence. And you have to remember that Don't Ask, Don't Tell doesn't fall under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. There's no jury, there's no judge, there's no normal...
So there's arbitrary decisions.
It's administrative decision. But
and they're different for each branch, aren't they?
No.
Or were before. No, not different, but they were administered differently.
Exactly. Yeah. They're enforced a little bit.
Enforced differently.
But the rules have changed. I could make a phone call anonymously to your commander and say, I know you're gay because... and they would pursue under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And you probably would have been discharged. Now it has to be a sworn statement by someone that has some alignment, some connection to the military.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It can't be my neighbor calling in secret.
It can't be a scorned ex.
Correct.
Okay.
The other one is that any commander, and a commander can be a captain, any commander would proceed with an investigation and could implement a discharge. Now, the investigation has to be conducted by an 06, a colonel or a captain or above. And the final decision on discharge will be made by a general officer, a general, one-star general, or an admiral. So the rules have changed a little bit, and that's helped some.
And when you say helped, it's resulted in fewer discharges.
I'm not prepared to say fewer
investigations, maybe.
It's lowered our caseload on strange cases, put it that way.
And I'm sure there are a bunch of strange cases. We're almost out of time, and we can't leave without talking about DART. DART finally passed sort of non-discrimination this week. Last week we talked about it, that they put into the non-discrimination ordinance that they were going to put through, they put in the word accept, that we will not discriminate on the basis of gender identity, except where allowable by federal or state law. And what putting that except in meant, they were going to add gender identity to the whole list, and then put in another clause that said except, which took out a protection for gays and lesbians and for transgenders. The Ordinance for Gays and Lesbians, today is the anniversary, the 15-year anniversary of them actually passing it. So they were just gutting the whole thing. And they did it because Ray Noah, who's one of the DART board members, had said that, well, there are times where we have to discriminate. And I think that scared enough people on the board to say, what do you mean there are times where we have to discriminate? If somebody's not doing their job, we remove them from doing their job. If somebody is physically not capable of doing their job, we might put them in a different position.
Right.
A bus driver who suddenly, whatever,
breaks her leg, can't drive the bus anymore. They don't fire the person.
Right.
They put them, give them an administrative position. So if somebody physically can't do the job, well, obviously, you take care of that person, but that's not discriminating against somebody because of who they are.
Right.
Because of this discrimination, because he was so clear that, no, we want to discriminate sometimes, they passed by unanimous resolution, because Noah kept his mouth shut, two others who were for it didn't show up, and they passed by unanimous resolution, overwhelmingly and clearly stating that we have no intentions to discriminate. In his resolution, Tsao is the he's a North Dallas representative of on the dartboard, made the proposal, or is he Plano? I'm not sure which one he is. It made the proposal, and he said, we have no intentions to discriminate, and therefore I propose that we take out the word except. We make it very clear that our intention is no discrimination. They took the word out. It's still not clear exactly what the wording is going to be. But what they said was, now originally they had ruled that it was going to be only gender identity. Now it's gender identity and gender expression. So we got both of them to make it very, very clear. And I think really the intention was never to discriminate, except by a few people on the board who thought that it was important to. So good for Dartboard. They got a standing ovation when they passed it.
Yeah, that is good.
And once again, they did the right thing, but boy, was that an exhausting several months to try to get them just to add two words. I mean, what I've been saying about this was, it took 6 months to negotiate two words. I would hate to have to listen to them debate a full sentence. it was just exhausting. Dave, I want to thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, and
I enjoy that.
Yeah, and once Don't Ask, Don't Tell is finally repealed.
We're a long way off.
We are a long way off from that. But once it's finally repealed, you'll come back. And once we know what the implementation is that they've been talking about, we'll talk more about how it's actually being implemented.
Right.
But thanks for being here with us. We look forward to your next run for office. Laron, I look forward to you never running for office.
That will never happen.
Next week, 4th of July weekend, we'll be back here with more Lambda Weekly. Who are we going out with?
Duran Duran.
Out on the ice, you speak to the crowd, but nobody hears. It's not a dream, and you are no prize, and you're not alone, coming from the fear. You on the lead, been under quiet attack, but now it's time for you and me. Gonna take it back. You've got to fight for what you believe. We're gonna make this stand, the finest hour that we see. When did our choice become irrelevant?